Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, Minister of 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbath Church Congregation. I'm at the 12th Hour in Elgin, Texas. Today is December the 14th, 2023, or it is the second day of Tebeth, 2027. Actually, this is our third sermon with this date, so we're going to call it number three for this date. The title of our sermon is The Fate of Assyria and the Triumph of the Church. This is a text of address by B.T. Hutter, January 11, 1947. This is 1TG, Timely Greeting, number 23. This is turn to Zephaniah chapter 3 and begin with the first verse. Woe unto her that is filthy and polluted unto the oppressing city. For the antecedent of the pronoun her is found in the 13th verse of the preceding chapter. And it is seen that the city here pointed out is Nineveh, the capital city of ancient Assyria. Now for the ascertaining of whether this Nineveh is actually the capital city of the ancient Assyria or of some other Assyria, we shall study the remaining verses of the chapter, Zephaniah 3:2. She obeyed not the voice, she received not correction, she trusted not in the Yeshua, she drew not near unto her her Yahweh. For this verse points out the fact that the city and nation here mentioned had the privilege of hearing the voice of the inspiration, even though they were not probably descendants of Abraham's seed, of knowing Yahweh's truth, but has failed to take heed, received not correction, trusted not in the Yahshua, drew not near unto her Yahweh. Zephaniah 3:3. Her princes within her are roaring lions. Her judges are evening wolves. They know not the bones till the morrow. Her princes, being like roaring lions, must be frightful persons who evidently think might makes right. Her judges are, as it were, evening wolves. That is, they are in the business not for the executing of judgment, justice, and righteousness, but for the kitchen and tearing, for the filling of their dens with the prey, although they may have more than they know what to do with, they know not the bones until the morrow. Zephaniah 3:4. For her prophets are light and treacherous persons. Her priests have polluted the sanctuary. Well, they are sanctuary people. I guess they are the seed somewhat of Abraham in one way or another. They have done violence in the law, or of Abraham's family. In the language of today, this verse would read, her teachers are light-hearted, not serious and sober-minded. They are trifling. They are of no account. They are treacherous persons. Her ministers, rather than having kept the church clean, have polluted it and have done violence unto the law, have declared it void. Well, this sounds like the General Conference of Seventh-day Adventists. That are nothing but Jesuit Catholic infiltrators anyway. So this sounds like the kind of spirit that they have brought into the Adventist Church by taking it over. Thus far, it is seen that the Assyria of this chapter represents a people who, have been well instructed in the things of Yahweh, for the law and the sanctuary, but instead of obeying the Yeshua and ruling justly and righteously, they have greatly transgressed, have gone down into sin as deep as any people can possibly go. Zephaniah 3:5. For the just Yeshua is in the midst thereof. He will not do iniquity. Every morning doth he bring his judgment to light. Okay. Every morning. He faileth not, but the unjust knoweth no shame. In view of the fact that the Yahweh is in the midst of them, they must be well informed in the things of the Yahweh, well aware that in the due season he makes known unto them his judgment. And the view of all of these as the only possible conclusion one can come to is that the Yahweh's church must be in their midst. Zephaniah 3:68. I have cut off the nations. Their towers are desolate. I made their streets waste, that none passes by. Their cities are destroyed, so that there is no man, that there is none inhabitant. I said, surely thou wilt fear me, thou wilt receive instruction. So their dwelling should not be cut off, howsoever I punished them, but they rose early and corrupted all their doings. Therefore wait ye upon me, saith Yeshua, until the day that I rise up unto the prey, for my determination is for the gathering of the nation, that I may assemble the kingdom, for the point upon them mine indignation, even all of my fierce anger, for all the earth shall be devoured with the fire of my jealousy. For the Yahshua himself, the Son, he warns that he has cut off the nations, that he has made their towers desolate and their streets waste, that he has destroyed their cities and has left no inhabitants in them. For he points out that all this he did as an object lesson for the future good, so that they as a nation might fear him and receive instruction, that their dwellings not be cut off. But in despite of these examples, they rise early and corrupt all their doings, so it is that at the long last, Yeshua arises unto the prey, gathers the nations, assembles the kingdom, and Assyria gets the punishment. From this we see that the Assyria, with the discussion, exists in the time of the end, and the time which the great and dreadful day of the Yahshua takes place. For this Assyria, therefore, is an antitype of the ancient Assyria, just as the Babylon of the Revelation 17:18 is an antitype of the ancient Babylon. So the Adventist church, then, is this antitypical Nineveh that has not received instruction, only from her enemy, the Jesuit Catholics that have been filtered and taken her over. She listened to them, and so she let them come in and take her over. For the Assyria charges inspiration is a rejoicing city that dwells carelessly, that says in her heart, I am, and there is none beside me. Zephaniah 2:15. At this point, let us pause a moment and summarize the characteristics by which this modern Assyria is to be identified. As man looks at the things, she is so great. As a man looks at things, she is so great that there is none like her. She is well instructed in the things of the Yahweh. Number two, she is oppressive. A hard ruling nation. Number three, she has polluted the sanctuary, meaning she had a candlestick of Israel, so she was somehow connected with the seed of Abraham and has declared that the law of the Yahweh is void. Number four, she has, when we say the law of the Yahweh, boy, we're talking about the sanctuary law of the feast days and the whole thing, the whole ordained system of true worship in the sanctuary, the blood offerings and everything. Number four, she has piled up wealth by the going after it as an eating wolf goes after its prey. Number five, she harbors the church of the Yahweh. Number six, she exists in the time that the Yahweh is to manifest his power and destroy all the wicked nations. Number seven, she is an Assyrian-like nation, widespread and nation of conquest. So the Adventist Church is widespread all over the world and all nations. And she has made an image to the beast, and she is the seventh head on that, of the seven heads is that woman, Mystery Babylon, is sitting on in Revelation 17. She's that seventh one, Laodicea. Okay, let's continue. There is but one people under the sun that answers unto all these descriptions, and that people is the English-speaking people, and whose midst is the church. In other words, it's talking about the Laodicea, the Seventh-day Adventist Church, and from whose midst the gospel and the Bible flow out unto all nations. As clear as language can make it, the burden of the prophet Zephaniah is for the English-speaking Christian world. For the Yahweh is now saying unto Assyria's capital city, indeed you are doing all these abominations, but you will not thus continue long, for the time is at hand. Put a stop to your absurdities. Zephaniah 3:9. And for then will I turn unto the people a pure language, that they may all call upon the name of the Yahshua, for the serving him with the one consent. For the inspiration, for the certainty, declares that after the Assyria receives her punishment, and after the wicked are taken out of his church, then will the gospel be proclaimed in a pure language, and pure the gospel truth, that whosoever will may call upon the name of the Yahshua for the serving him with the heart. And so, then it is that only those who have withstood temptation and the strength of the Mighty One will have a right for the proclaiming it, for the proclaiming of the five angels' messages. It says third angel, but I'm going to upgrade that here, the 12th hour that we're in now, to the five angels' messages, because they are joined together November the 19th, 1908. Zephaniah 3, 10, and 11. From the beyond the river of the Ethiopia, my suppliants, even the daughter of my dispersed, shall bring mine offering in that day. Shalt thou not be ashamed for all thy doings wherein thou hast transgressed against me? For then I will take away out of the midst of thee them that rejoice in thy pride, and thou shalt no more be haughty because of my holy mountain. When they apply the salvation through the blood of the everlasting covenant of the Yahshua is proclaimed in a pure language, then even from the ends of the earth Yahweh's people will come with an offering unto the Yahshua. Having removed all who rejoice in her pride, the church shall be haughty no more. Zephaniah 3:12. I will also leave in the midst of thee an afflicted and poor people, and they shall trust in the name of the Yahshua, their Redeemer, by his blood. For the fact that he leaves in their midst a poor and afflicted people is sufficient evidence in itself that the purification of the church takes place before the millennium, before the Isaiah 33:24 is fulfilled, and before he sets up the everlasting kingdom of the heaven mentioned therein of Daniel. Verse 4 and 45. That's the kingdom it's talking about there. The everlasting kingdom that's set up in the days of these kings here in the last days, and the 12th parabolic jar that we're in now. Zephaniah 3:13. For the remnant of the Israel shall not do iniquity, nor speak lies, neither shall a deceitful tongue be found in their mouth. For they shall feed and lie down, and none shall make them afraid. For the remnant, those that are left after the purification takes place, shall sin no more. They shall forever thereafter stand without guile in their mouth. Zephaniah 3:14. Sing, O daughter of Zion, shout, O Israel. Be glad and rejoice with all the heart, O daughter of Jerusalem. For a great day is coming for the righteous, a dreadful one for the wicked. We therefore, as the children of Zion, are encouraged to sing and shout for the joy, because we have finally come unto the time of the Yahweh's great deliverance. Okay, Zephaniah 3:15. For the Yahshua hath taken away thy judgments, he has cast out thine enemy, for the king of Israel, even the Yahshua, is in the midst of thee. Thou shalt not see evil any more. Surely, these revelations of the prophecy should encourage every believer to shout with the joy as he realizes that the day in which he shall no more see evil is right at hand, that the Yahshua is to be his only king, Zephaniah 3:16-20. And that day it shall be said unto Jerusalem, fear thou not, and unto Zion, let not thine hand be slack. For the Yahshua, the son of Yahweh, is in the midst of thee, is mighty. For he will save, he will rejoice over thee with the joy. He will rest in his love. He will joy over thee with the singing. I will gather them that are sorrowful for the solemn assembly. And that's the Feast of Tabernacles in the seventh month. Who are of thee, unto whom the reproach of it was a burden? Behold, at that time I will undo all that afflict thee, and I will save her that halteth, and gather her that was driven out, and I will get them praise and fame in every land where they have been put to shame. At that time will I bring you again, even in the time that I gather you, for I will make you a name and a praise among all the people of the earth, when I turn back your captivity before your eyes, saith Yahshua. For the Asher wants us to know that when he turns away our captivity, he will also make us a name and a praise among all the people of the earth. This kingdom of the Judah, house of David, the covenant purified and set apart, is therefore not only premillennial but also probationary. That means in the 12th parabolic hour that we're in now is when this will meet its fulfillment. And how glad we ought to be for the privilege to be among the first of the first fruits. Now that's the wave sheaf offering. That would mean even before the 144,000 comes forth. So you're going to have a first fruit that are purified at Passover that are going to come at the atonement. I mean at the Pentecost 7 weeks later. And meet the 144,000 brethren. So, the wave sheaf are purified first, and then the first fruits harvest. So, Pete Hollis had it right here. The first of the first fruits is your wave sheaf offering at Passover. The first fruits come, the 144,000 comes at the Pentecost. Okay, and then they're all sealed together at the atonement. Okay, that's the end of our number 23, volume 1 of the timely greetings. Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, Minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, Mount Zion, the 12th Hour, in the Elgin, Texas. Today is December the 14th, 2023, or the second day of Tebeth, 2027. We're going to hello everyone. Once again, we're going to continue on here now with our track, our study, with Time of Greetings, Volume 1, Number 24. And the title of this sermon is World War II yet to be finished, saints yet to be delivered by the Nahum. This is January the 18th, 1947, V.T. Hollis. It says, this afternoon we are to study the book of Nahum. For the burden of this entire book, three chapters in all, is concerning two separate people. For the ascertaining who these people are, we shall begin with Nahum 1:1 and Nahum 3:18. For the burden of the Nineveh, as a book of the vision of the Nahum, the Eshcolite, thy shepherds slumber, O king of Assyria. Thy nobles shall dwell in the dust. Thy people is scattered upon the mountains, and no man gathereth them. Plainly Assyria, with her capital city Nineveh, are the one people. Now, to find out who the other people are, we shall read verse 1, or chapter 1, verses 12 and 13, and 15, omitting those parts of the verses which pertain unto Assyria. Thus saith Yahshua, though I have afflicted thee, I will afflict thee no more. For now will I break his yoke from off thee, and will burst thy bonds in sunder. Behold upon the mountains the feet of him that bringeth good tidings, that publishes peace, O Judah. Keep thy solemn feast, perform thy vows, for the wicked shall no more pass through thee, he is utterly cut off. For the people unto whom Yahweh has afflicted by their dispersion among the nations, and whom he promises to afflict no more, and to break the Assyrian yoke from off the shoulders of his people, his church. And a typical Judah, house of David, the lawgiver, Genesis 49:10, where Shiloh, Yahshua, sits upon the throne of David here in the 12th parabolic hour. That's the time for the fulfillment of this prophecy that we're reading here. There are therefore the other people. For the title of the Yahweh's people, you know, is Judah. Okay, now this is important. Same thing as saying, antitypical house of David or the kingdom of David sit up in these last days, for they are counseled to behold the messenger of the Yahweh, who at the fulfillment of this prophecy brings unto them good tidings. And this messenger is antitypical David. Tidings of the peace, the message of the kingdom of the peace, Isaiah 11:6-9. For the Yahshua counsels them to be honest with him, honest in their profession of the faith. They are moreover assured that at the fulfillment of this prophecy, the destroying angels are to remove the wicked from the midst of the righteous. Thus will the wicked be raptured away and be no more. Okay, so it is that while Nahum predicts liberation and peace for the Yahweh's faithful people, he predicts disaster and humiliation for the antitypical Assyria as the power which they serve, and for the wicked in the church of the house of Israel, which is the SDA Seventh-day Adventist today. The three verses of the chapter 2 will suffice for the showing of the fate of the Assyria, Nahum 2:6-10-13. For the gates of the river shall be opened, and the palace shall be dissolved, she is empty and void and waste, and the heart melteth, and the knees smite together, and much pain is in all loins, and the faces of them all gather blackly. Behold, I am against thee, saith the Yahshua the host, and I will burn her church in the smoke, and the sword shall devour thy young lions, and I will cut off thy prey from the earth, and the voice of thy messenger shall no more be heard. Here the prophet predicts that Assyria's capital city will be emptied, and her patient, her palace dissolved. Clearly then, the kingdom of the Judah is set up in a time of the war and turmoil. What additional signs will mark the time? Let us read from chapter 2, Nahum 2:3-4. For the shield of his mighty men is made red. The valiant men are in the scarlet. The church shall be with the flaming torches in the day of his preparation, and the fir tree shall be terribly shaken. The church shall rage in the streets. They shall jostle one against another in the broadway. They shall seem like the torches. They shall run like the lightning. Since this prophecy meets its fulfillment in the day when the chariots are with the flaming torches, when they run like the lightning, when they jostle one against another in the highways and in the broadway, and since the automotive traffic of today completely and perfectly answers the prophet's description of it, then there is no other conclusion but that the day in which we are now living is in the day that the Nahum's prophecy is to be fulfilled. Now, in the view of the truth that we are living in such a period as described by the Nahum, together with the fact that the preparations for the Nahum's war are made during a time of such lightning-like travel. For the evidence clearly stands out that Nahum's prophecy is to meet its fulfillment in our day, and that the Assyria here in the prophecy, therefore, is not the ancient Assyria, but another widespread power that exists in the time at the end of the end, Daniel 12:9-10, the time in which its yoke is removed from Yahweh's people. So that would have to then translate into the Jesuit General Conference organization that has taken over the Seventh-day Adventist. Matter of fact, they've taken over all seven churches. Those seven heads that woman sits on, that mystery battle woman sits on. Moreover, since the antitypical Assyria fall liberates Yahweh's people, and hence from then on the wicked no longer pass through their midst, for the time and the events are solidly cleansed. All these predictions come to pass in the time of the purification of the kingdom of the David and the 12th parabolic hour. The tribe of Judah, the lawgiver, is the first of the tribes of the 12 tribes to be purified. And the judgment day of the living during the great and dreadful day of the Yahshua. Nahum 2:1. He that dashes in pieces is come up before thy face. Keep the musician, watch the way, make thy loins strong, fortify thy power mightily. It is plain to see that the one who dashes in pieces and who comes up before Assyria's face is the one who forces Assyria to prepare to militarize herself mightily, her forced military preparations agitated by him that dashes in pieces, starts Assyria on her downfall. Now, for the finding out what happens unto the one who dashes in the pieces, he who compels Assyria to prepare mightily, we shall read. Nahum 2:5. He shall recount his worthies, they shall stumble in their walk, they shall make haste unto the wall thereof, and the defense shall be prepared. His worthies, his mighty generals, stumble in their walk, that is, they make a mistake as they march on in the hope of victory. In the view of their disastrous blunder, and in the view of the fact that he that dashes in pieces is mentioned no more in Nahum's book, it is evident that by his stumbling he loses the war. Nevertheless, according unto the verses that follow in Nahum's chapter, the fall of Assyria is certain. Okay, it says, for the question then arises, if Assyria is the fall, and if the one that starts the war, that he that dashes in pieces, is himself to lose out first, then at whose hands is Assyria to fall? For the answer, let us turn to Isaiah 31. For this same Assyria is again brought into the view. Isaiah 31:6-8. Turn ye unto him, from whom the children of Israel had deeply revolted. When that day every man shall cast away his idols of the silver and his idols of the gold, which your own hand have made unto you for a sin, then shall the Assyrian fall with the sword, not of a mighty man, and the sword not of a mean man, shall devour him, but he shall flee from the sword, and his young men shall be discomfited. Assyria is to fall and to be devoured, but not by the sword of a mean man, not by him who dashes in pieces. Now the fact that Yahweh's people are admonished to turn unto him against whom ancient Israel revolted shows again that inspiration is speaking unto the antitypical Israel, unto the Yahweh's people in the Christian era. That's the era we're in now. Christians are identified as Catholics and the Protestant world, along with the Seventh-day Adventists, are all connected together. Isaiah 31:7, for in that day every man shall cast away his idols of the silver and his idols of the gold, which your own hands have made unto you for a sin. Obviously, the prophet is looking down the stream of time unto a time of a thorough reformation, a time and a time that only those who forsake every sin and embody truth and righteousness will be left in the purified church, which would be the house of David, the kingdom of David, Daniel 2:44-45. In the days of this king shall the Yahweh of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, left to other people, but it shall stand forever. None other will be found in the congregation of the Yeshua. Then the Assyria shall fall, and thus shall her yoke be removed from the neck of Yahweh's people. For the Assyrian is to fall because of his wickedness, and because Yahweh's people return unto him. Because of a thorough revival and reformation, Isaiah 31:9, and he shall pass over unto his stronghold for fear, and his princes shall be afraid of the ensign, saith the Yahshua, whose fire is in Zion, and his furnace in the Yerushalayim. All these calamities overtake Assyria as soon as the Yahweh's people turn unto him. Okay, as soon as they cast away their idols, there it is, right here. As soon as the Seventh-day Adventist cast away her idols, then she joins the purified kingdom of David, where the 144,000 purified saints comes out of the Adventist church into the kingdom of David. What are the Yeshua's fire in Zion and his furnace in Jerusalem for? For the answer we shall find in the Nahum 3:1-2. Behold, I will send my messenger, and he shall prepare the way before me, and the Yeshua whom ye seek shall suddenly come unto his temple. For his messenger is antitypical Elijah, even the messenger of the covenant, whom ye delight in. Behold, he shall come, saith Yahshua the host, but who may abide the day of his coming? And who shall stand when he appears? For he is like a refiner's fire and like a fuller's soap. For the prophecy of the Isaiah alone, with the prophecy of the Malachi, makes the subject very simple. According unto these prophecies, during the judgment of the living, and while the first fruits, as the servants of the Yahweh, the first fruits, 144,000, as the servants of Yahweh, stand with the Lamb on the Mount of Zion, where the headquarters of the plan of salvation to the blood of the everlasting covenant, faith in the blood of the everlasting covenant shall be in Zion and Jerusalem. Now, before passing judgment as to whether or not Nahum's prophecy in the World War II, it will be well to refresh our minds by the summarizing the main points of the study. Number one, two people are brought to you, the Church of Israel and a nation comparable unto the ancient Assyria, that would be Babylon, under which the Church is under subjection. Well, that would be the Jesuit, General Conference Jesuits in the Adventist Church, that would that's representing Babylon, that has taken over the Adventist Church, okay, under which the Church and the Seventh-day Adventist Church is under subjection to the Jesuits, General Conference of the Seventh-day Adventists, under subjection to the false Catholic Trinity doctrine of the three-in-one person of the Godhead that the Catholic Church created for all churches to adopt and believe as their main theme of salvation. And that theme of salvation negates the plan of salvation of the brother everlasting covenant of Yahshua to ever be taught as long as people accept that Trinity doctrine. Number two, Yahweh's people Judah, house of David, are asked to behold the messenger of the Yahweh, that is, antipical Elijah, and that's who's speaking to you now, who at the fulfillment of this prophecy and at a time rolling with the war brings them good tidings of the kingdom of peace. Number three, for the prophecy is fulfilled in the day of the unprecedented motorized vehicular traffic. And we have that today in the 12th hour, more so than we had in the 10th hour, as Richie Hollis said back in the 40s when this prophecy made its fulfillment, he thought. For the day when the chariots and automobiles are with the flaming torches, and when they jostle one against another in the Broadway, unquestionably in our day. In this day, he that dashes in pieces wars with this antipical Assyria, he begins her downfall. Number five, Assyria fortifies her power mightily after her enemy comes before her face. On the march to victory, Assyria's enemy, he that dashes in pieces, makes a mistake and consequently fails, loses the war. Assyria nevertheless later falls to but not by the sword of a main man. For the war, the fast rolling church, and the revival and reformation such as the world has never seen are signposts of the fulfillment of the Nahum's prophecy. And the other way people cast aside all their idols, okay, fully turn unto him, then it is that Assyria falls. Then it is that the wicked are removed from the midst of the people of Yahweh. For the Assyrian yoke is broken, and the servants of Yahweh, evidently the first fruits, 144,000, stand with the Lamb on the Mount Zion. Let us now consider the already historic fact. For the Hitler made his preparations for war in an era when the chariots were raging and the city. Running, lightning like, and jostling one against another in the Broadway. Then after the Allies saw Hitler's military might breaking everything in pieces wherever he touched his gun, then it was that they themselves began to build a gigantic war machine. For the Hitler stomach, as it were, by the starting war against Russia while he was still engaged in war with Great Britain. Although Germany lost the war, yet rather than taking deeper roots since the downfall of Hitler, England is instead wearing away and crashing, and the crashing sounds of her empire are becoming louder with each passing day. Hitler's war has dashed in pieces the whole world, and new chips and cracks are heard and seen right along, that there are new partisan politics from within and from without in every nation and people. Since the mayhem's description of the city and country traffic at the time his war prophecy is fulfilled perfectly fits the conditions of the World War II. We are assured that the war which Hitler began will actually be finished when Assyria falls and when her yoke is removed from the neck of Yahweh's people. From then on, the wicked shall no more be found in the congregation of the righteous. What is the overall purpose of the Mayan prophecy? It is for the enlightening of Yahweh's people of the signs of the time, for the making them aware that the great and dreadful day of Yahshua is at hand, that the purification of the church, the judgment in the house of Yahweh, 1 Peter 4:17, is soon to take place, that the wicked shall not much longer be in their midst, that the redemption of the righteous is at hand, that they must not fail to perform their Yahweh-given duties. Indeed, Nahum's prophecy clearly identifies Yahweh's people of today with the Assyrian yoke and points unto their liberation. Most important of all, though, the prophet Nahum plainly tells that all these things take place in our day, and that the fall of Assyria takes place while the Yahweh's people are running to and unto him. While the revival and reformation are successfully chaired by him who publishes peace, Nahum 1:15. If we therefore fail to take a hold of the message, and if we fail to reform as it he recommends, then it is not possible to survive the day of the Yahshua. For the detailed study of the book of Nahum, study track number 14, War News Forecast. End of number 24. One timely greetings, number 24. War News Forecast. We're going to end our sermon with page 20. Start with page 20 of War News Forecast with Nahum, I guess it's 1:15. Behold, upon the mountains, the feet of him that bringeth good tidings, that publishes peace. O Judah, house of David, kingdom of David, here in the last days, keep thy solemn feast, perform thy vows, for the wicked shall no more pass through thee, he is utterly cut off. For the time Judah attaches unto the Christian church, not only, that's the apostolic church, not only because of the antitypical significance, but also because of the hereditary factor. This will be seen as we review Judah's history. For the ten tribes, the kingdom of Israel, were by the ancient Assyria dispersed throughout the cities of the Medes and assembled by the Gentiles of that day. But it was not until years later that the two tribes, the kingdom of Judah, were carried into the Babylon, remaining there until the expiration of the 70 years of the Jeremiah's prophecy, then returned unto their homeland. Thus it was only the descendants of the kingdom of Judah who became so unfaithful that they rejected and crucified the Yeshua, but the faithful from among them accepted him and became the apostolic as the founding members of the New Testament church. For the church herself, therefore, is the daughter of the kingdom of Judah. Okay, it's talking about the Seventh-day Adventist church is the daughter of the kingdom of Judah. Hence she is appropriately still called Judah. For this is all wrong. The ten tribes that the Adventist church represents is not called Judah. So, they're not the daughter. The Adventist church is not the daughter of the apostolic church of Judah. Only the house of David that came forth in the 12th hour that we're in now is the daughter of Judah. While she is by virtue of the parentage, faithfulness, and purity, absent of the terrors, entitled to be called Judah. No, the Adventist church is not entitled to be called Judah, because Judah comes forth in his last days in the 12th hour of the journey of the living, and the Adventist church only had the 10th and the 11th hour of judgment of the dead. And antitypical Judah did not come forth in the 9th or 10th parabolic hour, as we call it prophesied. Come forth in the 12th hour that we're in now, and connected with the fifth movement, Matthew 20, verse 6, the fifth group of laborers, which is called at the end of the 11th hour. So it says, still because of her last day lukewarmness and the resultant infiltration of the terrorists into her membership, she is necessary. Of necessity, additionally named letters here. Well, so the plan, the eyes of Revelation 3:18, they shall behold upon the mountains the feet of him that bringeth good tidings that publishes peace. And beholding him, they shall accept his message and know the truth, for the truth shall make them free and shall save them from being spewed out of his mouth, Revelation 3:16. Therefore, only as they awake and give heed unto the voice of the true witness, and turn their steps toward the gates of the kingdom, may they ever hope to participate in the divine eventuality. O Judah, keep thy solemn feast, perform thy vows, for the wicked shall no more pass through thee, he is utterly cut off. Here's a prophetic utterance. Hearing the prophetic utterance is not only a promise for the purifying of the church when modern Assyria is being crushed, but also a suggestive statement as to what constitutes meat in the due season. For men today, and as to what movement they are to enlist in, if they would make sure of the salvation, they are enjoined to fix their vision upon the feet of him who brings good tidings, and that would be the antitypical Elijah, Malachi 4:5, message from the Yahshua, who publishes peace, the peace of the Yahshua's kingdom, and who declares that while the powers of the earth are engulfed in a gigantic war, and that's what they are now, the wicked in the church shall be cut off, no more to pass through her. Specifically, the prophet exhorts all penitently to turn unto the house of the Judah, that would be the tribe of Judah, the house of purified house of David, in the latter day kingdom of the Judas, Micah 4, Ezekiel 37:16-22. For the church and the purification of which are to be sealed 12,000 out of each of the 12 tribes as the first fruits, and he urges the subjects of the kingdom to perform their religious duties and to keep their promises unto the Yahweh. In short, he admonishes them to give heed unto the message of the hour. The message which that announces the imminence of the church's purification, after which, as the promise is, the wicked shall no more pass through her, for he is already cut off. See Matthew 13:30, 47-50. See Isaiah 66:16-20. Behold, the days come, saith the Yahshua, that I will raise unto the David a righteous branch, and a king shall reign and prosper, and shall execute judgment and justice in the earth. In his days Judah shall be saved, and Israel shall dwell safely, and this is his name whereby he shall be called the Yahshua, or righteousness. Therefore, behold, the days come, saith the Yahshua, that they shall no more say the Yahshua liveth, which brought up the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt, but the Yahshua liveth, which brought up and which led the seed of the house of Israel out of the north country and from all countries whither I had driven them, and they shall dwell in their own land. Jeremiah 23:5-8. It says, for the only way for the angel of the Laodicea, that is a prophet to the Seventh-day Adventist Church, the last prophet, Brother Johnson, upon 2002, upon whom is the condemnation of being wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked, and yet satisfied to enter into this glorious kingdom, is for him voluntarily to yield the reins of the control over the Church of Gilead Center that represents the last feeding pastor of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, and he sees the Yahshua himself taking them into his own hand. Testimonies of Ministers 300. Arouse therefore, O angel, prophet, Boris W. Johnson, of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, unto heaven's stirring cry. And I told him that message that I had gotten that day, July 14, 2002. I said, this is a message from heaven. I said, I don't have no opinion. I told him a second time, I don't have an opinion. They asked me for my opinion 2 times in a row. I said, I don't have no opinion. But I have a message from heaven. And here it is right here. Already prophesied by V.T. Holler. Awake, put on thy strength, O Zion. Put on thy beautiful garments, O Jerusalem, the holy city. He's telling the Adventist church here to awake, to put on his beautiful garment, the holy city. For henceforth there shall no more come unto thee the uncircumcised and unclean. Shake thyself from the dust, arise and sit down, O Jerusalem. Loose thyself from the bands of thy neck, O captive daughter of Zion. Thy watchmen shall lift up the voice, with the voice together shall they sing, for they shall see out of the eye, and Yeshua shall bring again Zion. Isaiah 52:1-8. In the present world war, is the one predicted by the Nahum, and if the sealing or marking of the service of Yahweh is to be completed without the angel having again to tighten their hold on the wind, Revelation 7:1, early writings, page 38, then the time for the restoring of the excellency of Jacob, which would be restoring the downtrodden kingdom of David, Amos 9:12-13-14, and of all Israel is at hand. At long last has come the hour for the Zion's deliverance from the Gentile bondage, and for her children to return unto the land of their fathers. Ezekiel 36:23-38, unto the vineyard of the Yahshua of the host. So let her stand ready and eager, awaiting her Yahshua's order to start marching thitherward. It is at this time that Assyria falls, the reason being, chapters 2 and verse 2, for the Yahshua hath turned away the excellency of Jacob as the excellency of Israel, for the emptiers have emptied them out and marred their vine branches, having already through the emptiers chastened his people. The Yahshua will chasten them no more, but will now free them, sharing with the nations the guilt for the mourning of the branches of his vineyard, his kingdom. This modern Assyria must now share in the divine retribution, while Yahweh is taking his people back into their own land. Inferentially, with the fall of the Assyria, the Gentiles in the possession of the promised land, and they are indeed today still in possession, 2023, the time of the Gentiles is fulfilled. Luke 21:24. Looking forward unto this time of the deliverance, the angel explained unto Daniel, and at that time shall Michael stand up, that's Yahshua the son of Yahweh, as the great prince which standeth for the children of thy people, and there shall be a time of the trouble such as never was since there was a nation, even at that same time, and at that time thy people shall be delivered, every one that shall be found written in the book. Daniel 12:1. And it shall come to pass in that day that the great trumpet shall be blown, and there shall come that were ready to perish in the land of Assyria, and the outcast in the land of Egypt, and shall worship the Yahshua in the holy mount at Jerusalem. For the glorious promise is your heart set upon it, brother, sister, then without delay respond unto the divine injunction. Turn ye unto him from whom the children of Israel have deeply revolted. For in that day every man shall cast away his idols of the silver and his idols of the gold, which your own hands have made unto you for a sin. Then shall the Assyrian fall with the sword, and not of a mighty man, and the sword not of a mean man, shall devour him. just it says, but he shall flee from the sword, and his young men shall be discomfited, and he shall pass over to his stronghold, for the fear, and his princes shall be afraid of the ensign, saith the Yahweh, whose fire is in Zion, and his furnace in Jerusalem, Isaiah 31:69. Many shall be purified and made white and tried, but the wicked shall do wickedly, and none of the wicked shall understand, but the wise shall understand. Daniel 12:10. This brings the end of our study. This hour contact us at the 11th hour call. That's number 11. Click on our audio archives. Dusty Roads and Sandy Feet by Elijah Davis. Man of Galilee, for he walked those dusty roads and you and me. Often prostrate and prone, careless, burdened, all alone, as he journeyed along that road to Calvary. Dusty roads and no feet, all the journey was complete from the manger to the cross. Jesus' golden street to a place in that land where someday we all shall meet. The author of the story, dusty roads and sandal feet. I have reason to believe in that man of Galilee, for there's nothing in this world he couldn't do. Change the water into wine, cast out demons, heal the blind, and that's why I believe in that man of Galilee. Dusty roads and no feet, all the journey was complete, from the manger to the cross. It was golden straight to a place in the land where someday we all shall meet. Author of the story, dusty roads, sandal feet. Dusty roads are his companion, desert places his abode. Sandal feet are often weary underneath a heavy load. Never complaining as he went along the way, on the way to Mount Calvary and the judgment day. Dusty roads and no feet, all the journey was complete, from the manger to the cross, to those golden streets, to a place in the land where someday we all shall meet. The author of the story, dusty roads and no feet. Dusty roses and no feet, how would you like to meet that man named Joshua coming down your street? Would you be like Zacchaeus and climb up in a tree? Or would you be like Jonah who wanted to be? Dusty roses and no feet, all the journey was complete. From the manger to the cross, to those golden streets, to a place in the land where someday we all shall meet. The author of the story, dusty roads and no feet. The author